Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Beauty Talk. I'm your host, Janice Tunnell, for today, January 20th. This is a wonderful day. I'm so excited about tonight's show. We have Donna Mee, who's come back to join us again tonight. And before we speak with Donna, my sister has some beauty news for you.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Beauty Lounge. If you haven't heard by now, Marietta Carter-Narcisse just released her 2013 Makeup Weekly Planner. It retails for $49.95. The planner includes dates of makeup trade shows and other beauty expos, different products she has listed each month. She has dates of award shows and film festivals, as well as quotes from some of your favorite makeup artists, plus much, much more. I just received mine in the mail about a day or so ago, and I love it. And I was thinking it was going to be like some spiral-bound, thin book that just had, you know, calendars for each month with, you know, a couple of details here and there. But it is literally a book, like a thick paperback book, so it's well worth the money. And in the back of it, she has just some different schedules where you can keep track of how much money you're making as well as how much money you're spending. She's challenging you to a 52-week money challenge where you save a dollar for each week in the year. So during the first week of the year, you're supposed to save a dollar. The second week, you save $2. And, you know, you go to the end of the year, 52 weeks, where you should have $1,378 saved. So I'm taking the challenge, and I'm going to do that. And she just has so many other goal setting types of resources here in this planner, which is really, really nice. So it's really more than just a planner. It's almost like a planner journal type, record-keeping type book. So it's really worth the money. So just putting that out there for anyone who's interested, I strongly encourage you to go to her website, Marietta Carter-Narcisse, NARCISSE.com, to either get more info or to place your order. Move over IMATS in the makeup show. There's a new beauty expo in town. It's called FAME. The FAME Expo, which is the Professional Hair and Makeup Expo, will take place in the Pasadena on June 29th and 30th at the Pasadena Convention Center. And we have your tickets right here on Beauty Talk. If you're interested, we will be giving away tickets to the expo tonight. They're one-day passes to the expo. So if you're interested, log on to Beauty Talk, blogtalkradio.com/Beauty Talk with Illusions. Log into the chat room, and please tell me why you think you would benefit from attending this FAME Expo. Again, it's the Professional Hair and Makeup Expo, so not just makeup, but hair as well. I'm sure it's going to include nails and some other things like that, but this will be an all-around beauty expo, and we'll be giving away 4 tickets tonight, and stay tuned each week for your chance to win more tickets throughout the next 4 or 5 months. And so we'll be having more details on that as well. And for all the beauty news tonight and more info on FAME, you can go to our Beauty Talk blog, which is Beauty Talk with Illusions, phameexpo.blogspot.com. And the website for the Fame Expo is phameexpo.com, Fame Expo. And last but not least, we have joining us tonight in the Beauty Lounge the beautiful and lovely Miss Lisa Brown Hall. She's editor-in-chief of Ghetto Fashionista blog. You can follow her on Twitter at Ghetto Fashionista. Lisa's going to recap the Golden Globes red carpet for us. Welcome to the show, Lisa.
Thank you, and happy Sunday. Red carpet season is in full effect. And last Sunday sort of kicked that off with the Golden Globe Awards. I will start my recap with Halle Berry, who is, I think, the favorite of all of ours because she is 46 and has an amazing body. So she can pretty much get away with wearing anything she wants to. Last Sunday, she opted for a Versace cutout dress, and it had kind of a geographic floral pattern to it, and the one-shoulder look, which, you know, Halle has kind of become known for the red carpet. I like the dress, but I think I would have liked to have seen her in something a little bit different. But again, because her body is so amazing, you know, she pulled it off. She looked flawless. She's back with her pixie cut with the spiky hair. So all in all, I thought she looked amazing. Just like to see her in something a little bit different. My second choice was Jennifer Lopez, who was absolutely resplendent in Zuhair Mirad. She is another 40-something who is turning heads. I mean, you know, really the Golden Globes was opportunity for women 40 and over to say, listen, I still have it.
Right.
Still giving you something to look at. I'm in my 40s, post-baby, and I'm giving you fever. So Jennifer Lopez, you know, the dress that she wore was a nude, lace beading covered, the dress, and I thought that she looked fabulous. She had soft sort of retro waves in her hair. The only thing that with J-Lo that was a little bit off, I don't know if you all took a close look at her makeup, but it looked like her makeup artist may have gone a little bit overboard with her bronzer. Her forehead was a little bit overly contoured. It was like, I think that took away from her look a little bit. She looked amazing. Her body is amazing. Her choice of dress, I thought, you know, just really showcased all of her assets. But the makeup artist, I'm just like, oh, we need to be really careful with who we choose to give us a little beat for the red carpet, because that kind of distracted a little bit from what she was wearing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know if anyone else is a fan of the show, ABC show Scandal. I am a huge fan. And Kerry Washington is my next choice. I love Kerry Washington. I think that she has an amazing talent, amazing intellect, amazing beauty. And for Golden Globe, she opted to wear a sheer beaded Miu Miu gown. And a lot of people didn't love her look. I loved it. I loved the fact that it was nude, which was very much on trend for the red carpet. I loved her new haircut. She debuted bangs right before the First Lady debuted her birthday bangs. And I just thought she looked amazing on the red carpet. I think for me, Kerry Washington can do no wrong, basically.
Can I interrupt you for a second, Lisa?
Absolutely.
Because with Kerry Washington, it's funny that you mentioned the bangs, because that was one thing that I did not like about her look. The bangs I didn't mind. I think I just did not like how straight her hair was.
Oh.
It had a little body to it, just a little bit. I would have probably liked it better. And speaking of the First Lady, I was not crazy about her bangs at all.
Really?
No, I wasn't. I'm not at all. Maybe I have to see it styled a little differently, but no, I wasn't crazy about it.
I saw a picture of the First Lady today at the official swearing-in of President Obama, and I love her hair. And I think bangs can go, you know, they can make you look youthful, or, you know, they can kind of turn your look around. But I love Kerry Washington. I love her bangs. I do agree that her hair was a little bone straight, but I just love her look. I really do. I was like, oh, I mean, a lot of people didn't like the dress, the beaded gown, the fact that it was sheer. I just loved it. I love everything about it.
One thing that I like about Kerry Washington is that her look is always something very simple, and yet it makes a huge statement.
I agree.
That's what I really like about her.
Yeah. Oh, the bangs are so funny, because I literally just straighten my hair. I'm natural. My mother was like, you didn't get bangs? Because, I mean, I'm such a huge fan of Michelle Obama. I'm like, I'm not cutting bangs for myself because I might end up looking like I'm 15. But I just think that on First Lady and on Kerry Washington, I love the bangs. I thought they were pitch perfect on both of them. So for the red carpet, color was predicted to be a really huge trend. But I'm not sure if you ladies noticed, the biggest hue that kind of stood out was the color red. A lot of the ingenues, including Jennifer Lawrence, who wore Au Couture Oscar de la Renta, she caught a lot of flack, actually, when she won her award for Silver Linings Playbook because she declared that she had beat Meryl Streep. And basically, that was a quote from Bette Midler from the movie The First Wives Club. But yes. I love the red. I loved it on Zooey Deschanel. Basically had on the exact same dress. As Jennifer Lawrence, which, of course, gives you the opportunity to do the comparison of who wore it best.
Right.
And for me, I really think Deschanel was my favorite. The dress that Jennifer Lawrence wore, same cut, same shade of red, but the bust line on her dress was a little funky. It was it made her look almost like the dress had built-in boobs. And on Zooey Deschanel, it was a little bit more streamlined, a cleaner cut at the bust line. They both look beautiful. I loved the fact that they, you know, wore sort of a classic line with the Oscar de la Renta with a more fitted bust line and full skirt, almost giving you kind of a 50s look. But for me, Deschanel definitely wore the dress a little bit better. One of the probably most anticipated looks of the evening was Anne Hathaway. It was so funny watching all the red carpet coverage. Everyone was kind of clamoring for a glimpse at Anne Hathaway, and I just thought that she was amazing and flawless, and she opted for a white beaded vintage Chanel, and she still, of course, has her Les Miserables pixie cup, which I just love her hair. She had a very simple look. She wore red lips, and I just thought she looked flawless. I mean, she was hands down one of my favorite looks of the evening, definitely. You know, the point of less is more, there's beauty and simplicity. I think she totally exemplified that in her red carpet look. My absolute, hands-down winner of favorite for the evening was Juliana Hough. She actually wore Monique Lhuillier. She paired a beaded gown with, she has a shorter haircut, and she had it pinned up in a faux hawk, which kind of gave her, you know, kind of that princess gown that she had on, a definite edge. I mean, she hands down was probably when she hit the red carpet, I mean, I was just like, she was giving me everything because I liked the contrast of the real edgy sort of faux hawk hair with, you know, this kind of princess gown, kind of an unexpected edgy contrast. And I really, really loved her look. So she probably, I would say, was my hands down favorite next to Anne Hathaway for the evening. The other, you know, sort of one of my favorites of the evening was Catherine McPhee, who is in the show Smash. She had on Olivier Theisen's, and she wore a black dress, which, you know, if you're going to go to a red carpet event and wear black on the red carpet, I think you want to go with something that's either very classic, or she went in the opposite direction with something that had a plunging neckline and a split way up to here, and I just think she looked amazing. She just definitely, she had that body from, you know, dancing a lot on the show Smash. She just looked incredible for the evening. And then I guess my final note from the evening was in terms of the makeup, smoky eyes seemed to be the favorite look of a lot of the red carpet looks that I saw. There were, the other trend was probably a bold lip, like Anne Hathaway, who, like I said earlier, pulled off a flawless, gorgeous red lip. I mean, I like, you know, either or. So, you know, when you're thinking about your makeup for the red carpet, I think it's important to have one focus. So if you're going to do a smoky eye, obviously have a nude lip. Or if you're going to do, you know, sort of a bold lip, you want to go a little bit more toned down with the eye. But all in all, I'm so excited about red carpet season, and, you know, Oscars, of course, is probably the Super Bowl for fashion.
Right.
So I'm really looking forward to that coming up next.
Right. And one thing I'm surprised one person that you didn't mention, or at least I didn't hear you mention, which was one of my, actually, the best dress for me was Kate Hudson and Alexander McQueen.
Yes, she actually, that's actually a good point because she actually wore the black as well, and heavily jewel encrusted. I loved her dress too. I thought she looked amazing. Every time I look at her, she gives me Goldie Hawn all day.
Yes.
It's like mother child. But you're absolutely right. She looked amazing in that black McQueen. That definitely was one of my favorites as well.
Yeah, it was gorgeous on her.
Well, thank you very much for that report. I enjoyed really listening to it. I missed the Golden Globes, so that was a thorough report.
I know. I actually had like a few questions I was going to ask you, but you covered them all in your recap.
Well, I'm here if you have questions. Definitely fire away.
Yeah.
So you're going to hang on the call with us a little bit?
Yeah, I'll hang on. Definitely.
Okay. Cool, because I'm excited about having Donna on, and I just want everybody to know that those of you who are out there listening, if you have questions or comments, please don't be afraid to call in and ask or to speak. The number is 914-803-4399. Again, the number is 914-803-4399. And, of course, you can always listen online, and you can join us in the chat room with your comments and questions as well, and we'll make sure we get your comments and questions out there. Welcome back, Donna.
Hello.
How are you? We're glad you're back.
I'm doing okay. Been super busy, crazy busy as always.
I am sure of that. I'm sure of that. So why don't you start the show off? I mean, I know you were here not long ago, but start the show off just by letting our listeners know a little bit about your area of expertise. I know you've been in the business for years, and I know you've covered a lot of ground. So if you just don't mind when you introduce yourself, just to share a little bit of that with us.
Sure. How long is the show?
Uh-oh.
Okay. I say that facetiously, but I've been around a long time. It's my, 31st year in the industry.
Wow.
Which is scary in itself.
Did you say 31st?
31 years.
Oh, my God.
And I still get carded when I go out, which is the best part. Yeah, so 31 years, it seems like an old movie I watch. It's so distant sometimes when I think about some of the things that I've gone through. But I, like a lot of artists, I started out in retail cosmetics, which so many people are embarrassed of that. So I want to say everybody out there who, you know, works in retail, whether it's, you know, MAC or Elizabeth Arden, I mean, that's where a lot of people started. A lot of people don't even know that Kevin Aucoin started there as a Lancome counter in Louisiana. And Sam Vine, you know, was working at the mall when literally he got pulled to do Fashion Week. You know, I don't. Sam's been on your show. I don't know if he even told those stories.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's a great place. I highly suggest that everybody does start there. So many artists, you know, start, you know, just doing their friends. I call it the toilet makeovers because, you know, your friend sits on the toilet and says, do my eyes, you know. And so many people start that way. And, of course, I was that person, too, in junior high school. I used to do all my friends' makeup. You know, if they couldn't wear makeup, their moms wouldn't let them. They'd come to my house in the morning. I would put makeup on them, and we'd go to work, school all day. And all the way home, I would bring them home, and I would even wash it off their face before they'd go home and get caught with it. And I started working at the mall, you know, not even... You know, Nordstrom wasn't even around back then, if you can imagine that. But I started working at JCPenney's, which is even more probably embarrassing to admit because, you know, at the time their cosmetic counter was really just all the stuff hanging on the wall like in a drugstore for the most part besides like Revlon and a few other brands. But that's really where I started, and that's where I kind of got the fever and the passion to do makeup. Nobody used to do makeovers back then, you know, they just stood around and I would do people's makeup and make them stand there because we didn't even have chairs in the department back then. And they actually ordered their first chairs because of me because customers were complaining they had to stand there like probably an hour and a half because I was so slow. But for anybody who was listening to the last time I was on Beauty Talk.
Donna, I'm sorry, did you say... Did you say they ordered more chairs?
They didn't have makeover chairs back then, at least at JCPenney. They had them at the big department stores, but, you know, I was pretending I worked there. Can you imagine you're at Nordstrom, and I mean at JCPenney's and like Max Factor and Aziza's hanging on the wall, and you're stopping people trying to do makeovers off of, with that stuff? I was excited, you know. I mean, God, I've seen some of the pictures because I have pictures logged of, you know, people I would do before, and I would take before and afters, you know, with a Polaroid camera back then.
Right.
And I have pictures, and I just laugh like crazy now when I look at them. But, you know, that was good makeup in the 80s. We didn't have the brands and the products and the tools we did back then. I mean, lip liner had just, you know, came out, you know, to the general public not too long before that. So you had bright fuchsia or red, you know. So you'd be wearing plum lipstick with a friggin' red or fuchsia lip liner because that's how you thought you did it. It's pretty horrible. I actually have a book in my library of Ford models, all the top models from 1981, I think it is, and it's horrifying to see, like, the magazine, the work that was literally on magazines and celebrities, and there's a picture of Naomi Campbell, you know, and her face is totally gray, and her lips are all, you know, drawn on crooked with a dark ring and everything. I mean, it was common. Just bad makeup was just what we did back then. There's no way about it.
Oh, wow.
You know, and that's when makeup was worn as an accessory. So, you know, women would walk in with a little color swatch they'd cut out of the lining of their new, you know, blouse, and you just ran around in your 4-inch pumps until you found, you know, a green or blue eyeshadow that matched it. And that's what you wore, you know. So if you wore blue, you had on blue eyeshadow. If you had on green, you wore green eyeshadow. If you had on white, you wore white eyeshadow. I mean, it was just such a different world back then. But that's what really started me off and really kind of gave me the fever to do it. But I even suggest all my students at my academy that they do retail work. And, you know, that's not what a lot of them want to hear. They want to go straight out and do celebrities, which is just not realistic. You have to first get your speed down. You have to first get comfortable with your products. You've got to invest in, you know, the right things in your kit. You got to understand how they wear every day for all skin types and, you know, indoor and outdoor and all those things. And working retail on all different face shapes and eye shapes and bone structures and skin coloring and skin types, I mean, that's where you learn really fast. You're forced.
Yeah.
You know, you're doing it. You're like, you're thinking in your head, oh, shit. And you're forced to fix it before the client looks in the mirror. You know, that's really good practice, and you're getting paid for it while you're there.
and believe it or not, Donna, believe it or not, so many people who work in retail, that's where they meet celebrities. When celebrities come in from out of town, and you know, and they go straight to the counter.
That's true. I've had a lot of my people actually, you know, a lot of people think, you know, retail, give me a break. You know, I've had people get on teams instantly because after I train them, they're, you know, they're really good at what they do and get on to the teams, and all of a sudden they're doing an event with Laura Mercier, and she's standing there going, wow, you know, that was really amazing. Do you want to see me tomorrow? I'm in town for a music video. I mean, that kind of stuff happens with the big teams. Of course, I live in, you know, Newport Beach, California, which South Coast Plaza is like the big mall out here where all the, you know, big wigs and celebrities do come. So it's easier for some of my people, perhaps. But, you know, those, you know, national artist tours and stuff go on, you know, all over the place. For those people who do retail, you know, freelance work somewhere else, I suggest that they look into some of those and how they can get onto some of the teams. But anyway, that's where I started. That was 31 years ago. I left that position. Actually, I became the top salesperson in the United States for Stagelight Cosmetics way back then. If anybody remembers Stagelight, I don't know. They're the ones who first invented those loose shimmer eyeshadows. Now, of course, every brand makes it, but they were the ones who invented it. And they used to sell it at Judy's. Anybody remember Judy's? Store? No?
Mm-mm.
Maybe it's a West Coast thing. It bought out by Rampage, but it was the young, hip place to shop back then, and they had a little cosmetic counter, too. But I started working for them and doing, you know, like a coordinator position and traveling and training all the people on all of the different things that they did. And then I ended up back in retail working for A Company and Nordstrom, and that's where I found Christian Dior Cosmetics. And back when it just wasn't even big deal, it wasn't popular, it was just, you know, way more expensive than everything else. And, you know, the average eyeshadow back then, if you can imagine, at the mall was $4.75. So I remember I got stuck, so they told me, on Christian Dior, because they said, oh, you know, we can't keep anyone over here. It's too expensive. Nobody buys it. And I was like, oh, wow, how much is it? And they're like, the eyeshadows are $27. And I was like, oh, I mean, that was like $1 million back then. You know, it's like, no wonder this stuff doesn't sell. But I tried it, and I just fell in love with it. And I'm telling you, I didn't have anything but like 2 nail polishes left within a month. I sold everything in the case. So I ended up getting promoted with them and went on to become a trainer with Christian Dior for a while. And then I became beauty director for all of Nordstrom, traveling and training all their people on all the different lines. And then I started, got hooked up with a friend doing some TV and celebrity work and print and stuff like that. Started doing runway. That's where I met Kevin Aquan and worked with him several times backstage in Fashion Week in New York, which was an amazing experience. If there's any Kevin fans out there, it shocks me nowadays when it was just a few semesters ago in my academy, I showed a Kevin book in class, and this one boy in the class says, that book's so old, like, oh, it's vintage. And I was like, okay,
oh my
not
goodness.
That old, first of all. He goes, oh, I've seen it before. It's like, why are we looking at that? Like, there's newer stuff. And I was like, do you even know who this is? Like, I just wanted to beat him.
Yeah.
So it's so funny that people just don't even know who he is. Like, he's so forgotten already. In fact, I just posted something on Facebook last night saying, you know, because he should not be forgotten, you know, an interview thing with him and a blog someone had wrote on him.
Wow.
Let's see, what else? It was my position with Nordstrom as a beauty director. Going to New York, we used to meet all of the, you know, creative directors of all the different cosmetic lines, and that's where I found Makeup Forever in a little teeny salon studio in Trump Tower, and I thought, oh, my God, this is the most amazing thing I've ever found in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why have I never heard of this? And they said, oh, we're just in 11 little pro shops. You can't buy it in the general public. We buy it full price in Paris and bring it here and just mark it up because it's amazing and it's what everyone uses in the magazines. And, I mean, at the time they had 160 eyeshadows. And I was like, why do you need 17 reds that all look the same? You know?
Right.
And they're like, oh, but one's sheer, one's matte, one's sheen, one's shimmer, one's metallic, and, you know, and like just so many reds and yellows, and it's like, what would you do with all this? You know, it was like a candy store makeup, and when no one made those kind of colors, but, you know, it's a true pro line. So I thought, gosh, this is amazing, and MAC was, of course, taking over the world at that point in retail, and I thought, gosh, if I can bring this back to Nordstrom and maybe convince this company to launch retail, they would kick MAC's butt.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we did. I convinced him to do it, and Danny Sands was like, no. She would say, you stupid Americans, they do not know how to fit the Zippo line. We do not do that. We do not sell retail, you know, da-da-da. But, you know, 4 glasses of wine later, she signed it, so she launched retail, and of course now, you know, they became so large and so quickly in a few years that Louis Vuitton bought them for, you know, millions of dollars. So, yay for them. I wish I got a bonus check out of that. but, yeah, I still use a lot of Makeup Forever products. It's an amazing, amazing brand. There's really nothing like it in the market. When people tell me they have their favorite foundation of this or that, I just know that they haven't tried it. Because in my opinion, there's just no comparison. I really feel like I've tried everything out there. Oh, but anyway, after I left Makeup Forever, it was such a great experience because I had to travel with Danny Sands, who's the creator of Makeup Forever. I had to travel with her, you know, all over the United States because all these accounts that I had, you know, convinced them to open. I didn't say this, I guess. I left my position as beauty director at Nordstrom to work for Makeup Forever because once I convinced them to go in the stores, they just really didn't know what they were doing. They had no, you know, training manual, no schematics, and no, you know, coordinators or account executives or whatever, and it was falling apart the first week, and I was like, you know, I'm the one who convinced you guys to do this. You guys have to get your shit together. And the owner at the time goes, you do it. I was like, I have a job, thanks anyway. Like, that's not for me. And, you know, negotiated with him, and I said, okay, I'm going to go upstairs and quit right now. So I ended up working for them and actually being their only employee in the entire United States for the first almost year. So it was crazy. So I was the account executive, the trainer, the coordinator. I wrote their training manual.
And which
I did all their events.
The...
What year?
Yeah.
I think 94.
Makeup Forever?
Yeah.
Okay.
But
I asked that because I know Makeup Forever has been around for a long time, but, you know, a lot of makeup artists think it's so new, you know, because
it's new retail. We launched it in Nordstrom, but, you know, they were still just really a small little, you know, mm-hmm. company. They only had a little boutique somewhere in Turkey that only pro makeup mm-hmm. artists bought from. So you can imagine how many professional makeup artists are there in Turkey, for God's sake. You know, there's like, what, four? So, I mean, they didn't have a lot of sales, you know, in these little countries
right.
where they have these little pro shops. So they were just weren't really ready for the magnitude of being in, you know, 46 Nordstrom doors all of a sudden. That was a lot of business, and they couldn't keep up with the shipping and the payments, and it just, you know, it got ugly at Nordstrom with them, and Nordstrom kicked them out. Macy's grabbed them because they knew how good they were doing, and Macy's quickly learned, oh, wow, they're a nightmare. And so Macy's kicked them out, and that's, you know, they kind of, I don't know where they were for a little while, but somewhere in there that Louis Vuitton picked them up, and of course Louis Vuitton owns Sephora. A lot of people don't know that either. And so they put it in Sephora, but they thought, well, they don't even really have a reputation here. So Sephora private labeled it and named it Sephora Artist for a while. So here Sephora was selling, you know, really cheap compacts, pro palettes and stuff, and it honestly didn't sell too well either because Sephora was new, and it wasn't doing that good. Everyone came to Sephora, but they were buying all the brands they were familiar with, so no one was buying the Sephora product. So then it got dropped, so we thought Louis Vuitton was going to drop them for a while, but then they just put it back as Makeup Forever on, you know, in the stores, and it slowly, you know, built a business. So now there's, I believe, three pro stores in Sephora. I know that here in Costa Mesa, Vegas, and I believe there's one more. I could be wrong. But, of course, you know, they're doing amazing business now and amazing volume. So I'm
right.
proud of them. I feel like they're my little baby, even though I have nothing to do with them anymore. Well, actually, I just taught for them at their Pro Loft in L.A. not too long ago. I just did a few classes there. But when I was working there, that's where I traveled with Danny Sands, you know, almost every day for 3 months.
Right.
So it was there that, you know, she's considered a living legend makeup artist in Europe. So over here, a lot of people might not be that familiar with her. When I traveled with her, like, she knows everybody. I mean, you know, somebody would walk away and she goes, that is Madonna's makeup artist. You know, 20 minutes later, that's Demi Moore's makeup artist. You know, it's like every other person was somebody famous. You wouldn't know it because we worked at the mall. Like, we didn't know what the pro industry was really like so much back then.
Right.
So I met a lot of people, you know, working for them. And when I ended up leaving Makeup Forever is when I started my own studio out of my house. And I had so much business, I couldn't even do it all. Really at first, so I ended up adding and opening an agency so I could send out other makeup artists when I was busy or booked, so I didn't really lose a client after all.
Mm-hmm.
And that quickly backfired because once I trained people, then they ended up, you know, really just competing with me and not
right.
always saying, I'm booked. So I was like, okay, I trained you for a long time. Now that you're great and better, that really sucked. So I think I told that story last time, but I ended up launching and starting a really big bridal division at that point. And, gosh, I think the first year I made over 100, I think it was 110,000 something cents the first year of doing bridal. So I kind of feel like I mastered the bridal industry, although I also did, you know, pageant and commercial and, you know, still did a little bit of TV and commercial work and all that as well. I created my own brush line. So I'm not sure if you guys use spot conceal brushes, you know, the little tiny concealer for blemishes.
Yes.
I created that brush because it didn't exist back then. You know, our only concealing brushes were, you know, like that normal, what's considered like a medium-sized paddle now for around the eyes. So, you always had a big blob on every, you know, blemish. It never really looked so fabulous for print work. So I invented that brush, of course. Now every single brand in the world makes it, which kind of sucks. I was told back then you couldn't patent a brush. So I didn't get anything for that either. And let's see, I ended up opening Empire Academy of Makeup not too long, I think a couple of years after I opened my studio and my agency. So I've had my academy now for 17 years. And it was here that I developed, you know, a lot of advanced curriculum and stuff, just a different way of explaining things. I do everything based on science and ways that I figured out things. When I was a makeup artist, there weren't any schools, first of all, when I started, which really sucked. But I'm not sure what's better. No schools, or nowadays there's so many scam schools. You know, mom-and-pop places open up on every little city, and it's really frustrating. But we had no schools back then. So I had to learn by just, you know, watching, you know, asking people questions, asking to assist, studying things. I actually learned a lot of things from going to photography classes and learning about lighting and that type of thing. And
Donna,
you know, yeah?
I'm sorry, not to cut you off, but I'm listening to, I mean, you've gone through, it seems like, almost every area in the business almost, and I'm listening, and I'm just wondering, for those newcomers out there who are listening, and because you've covered a lot, you did the retail, you've worked with product lines, bridal, I mean, everything. If they're sitting out there listening to you and they're wondering, how do I do it? Just one of those areas, what would you say to them?
Well, I think finding out what you want to specialize in is great and going after it. But it depends on if they're, you know, already a working artist or they're, you know, starting out and they need schooling. It would be a different recommendation, because if they're going to school,
mm-hmm.
they first of all need to research really good and find a school that specializes in what they do, because most schools
mm-hmm.
don't specialize in a lot. The majority of them here, at least in LA area, specialize in special effects. There's very little
mm-hmm.
special effects work out there, but they're not going to tell you that. You know, so depending on what they want to do, my focus has always been beauty. I mean, I can do, you know, a little effects work, but it's just not my thing. I would rather, you know, give those jobs away. You know, I hate to say I'm the diva that just wants to do the pretty girl and not the, you know, oozing flesh wound zombie, but that's just not my thing. And that's, you know, that's a lot of makeup artists, ideally. But, you know, film, you know, and television is not really my thing either. So I
mm-hmm.
specialize in print. So depending on what they want to specialize in, you know, to find somebody who really does that, and you can focus. But if you're in school, you should take a little bit of everything, because I've had lots of students, you know, think they want to do runway. You know, and I just laugh the first day, and I have to put them in their place. Okay, it's called Fashion Week. It's twice a year. What are you going to do the other 50 weeks? Like, let's be realistic, you know. Or people say, I want to do makeup for Cirque du Soleil. It's like, you know, a lot of schools would go, great, we have a great theatrical class, take this, blah, blah, blah. I'm just going to say, you know what? Cirque du Soleil does their own makeup. Find a new goal. And some people are, like, so devastated. They're like, well, then I don't want to be makeup artist. Okay, good. Well, I'm glad we cut to the chase and saved you a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
No, so really knowing what they want to do, or some people say, oh, I want to be Paris Hilton's, you know, personal makeup artist. It's like, what if she's hit by a bus tomorrow? Like, let's have a bigger goal. Do you really want to just do celebrities? Is, you know, it's great to have a goal and want to do specific people, but you don't want to, I don't know, pigeonhole yourself so much.
Right.
You don't really know where your
right.
path is going to go. I've had people that wanted to specialize in beauty or bridal or whatever, but their beauty skills just weren't that great. But injury workshop comes on, and they're amazing at it. And, you know, some people are like, I don't like all the blood. But the truth is, when you're good at something, you enjoy doing it. So when they
right.
instantly see that their injuries look better than everybody else's, all of a sudden they're pretty motivated and excited about to go research more on how to do it even better. So it's kind of how passion starts, is your first positive reaction from people about being good at something. So, you know, I encourage students to not, you know, have such a tunnel vision and really try and do a little bit of everything and see what you're good at. some people, you know, think they want to specialize in TV and film, but their first few jobs in print kind of take off and lead to this. Next thing you know, they haven't done any TV or film. Mm-hmm. So you kind of don't know where your path is going to go. But for artists that are already working, you know, just focus on it and go after it. Like I kind of like to master one thing and then move on and master something else. Personally,
right.
That's my thing. That I didn't know that was my goals going in, but I did so much with bridal, but now I teach people. You want to make $100,000 the first year? I'll show you how. Like I do it. I have grads that have done it. Not all of them who take my class do it, of course. You can't make everyone do. You know, we've all read a great book and thought, oh, I should do that, but we don't. You know, so you can't make everybody do it. But those that really want it, I show them how, and that kind of. I don't know. That gets me off. I really love helping and mentoring and showing other people how to do what I've already proven can be done. So the bridal thing, it's enormous business, at least in this area where I live. It has more weddings than any other county in the U.S. because we have lots of destination weddings, beautiful hotels on the beach and stuff like that. So bridal, the thing is, I don't care if you live in Iowa, you can have a bridal business. People never stop dying or getting married, you know, so you could be a mortuary artist or a bridal artist and pretty much always have work.
So let's talk about tonight's discussion and how you can market yourself to do those things.
Can market yourself to do which one? Because they're all different.
any of them. Let's pick one.
what do you think most of your listeners are into?
Well, let's say you're an artist you're either working full time, part time, or you're freelancing for a counter. Mm-hmm. And let's say you want to get into fashion, or you want to do music videos, or you want to do film and TV. Where do you start?
Well, if they want to do, TV and film, obviously there's not TV and film going on in every city. So depending on where they live, if they live in, the middle of nowhere, that's going to be a really hard challenge. They obviously need to relocate. But I still suggest there's still something. There is some local TV station, even if it's a four-hour drive from them, that would be considered their closest local TV station, even if it's cable. You can go in there and volunteer. They're not going to let you do the newscaster because the newscaster's makeup has to be consistent all the time. The truth is most newscasters, a lot of them still do their own makeup, and a lot of people don't know that. But they can go volunteer to do whoever they're interviewing. They can do the roving reporter, the one on the streets, if she's standing in a hurricane or at a grand opening at a, new grocery store or whatever. The roving reporters have to have that same consistency, and you maybe have noticed if you watch the news. They can volunteer and try to get their foot in the door and do those people. And then they at least have there to see their work on video. It's on TV within, hours, TiVo it or whatever. And they can start a reel of seeing their work and learn how to, I thought I had enough blush on, it didn't show up. Or, I needed, it looks too much, it's blotchy, it's whatever. They've got to learn from doing it if they haven't had the opportunity to go to a good school. So, I challenge my people who want to do TV work to, there's, in this area, of course, I think there's 8 infomercial companies within like 10 miles of here. So it's like, infomercials are pay about $800-$900 to powder people during the day. It's like, that's not hard work. You could get your foot in the door. It's just about tenacity and, doing the marketing things, making the right resume, making the right phone call, being tenacious, that kind of a thing. But to do volunteer work for a lot of the local cable stations, they usually don't say no. And if you're good and you're dependable and you show up and you did a few of those free things, then sooner or later, the person who does do makeup for the bigger people is going to be sick or on vacation or maternity leave. You just have to be dedicated and find the door, to walk through. For those that do, want to do wedding. What?
I thought I definitely agree with that.
I'm sorry, one more time?
I said I definitely agree with that.
Oh, okay, sorry. But, I mean, those that work in retail and do want to do weddings, I hear that a lot. And they're like, yeah, but I can't because I have to work. It's retail. I work every Saturday. I just want to smack those people. Because it's like, okay, first of all, I'm not stupid. I used to do retail, too. How come mm-hmm. I could do a shitload of weddings working at the mall and you can't? It's like most weddings, first of all, if you've ever done a wedding, you know that the bride has to be ready at least 2 hours before the ceremony for her pictures. If she has to drive to some location for her pictures, that's more like 2.5-3 hours early. So if most wedding, the average wedding time is noon or 2, that means she has to be ready usually by 11. And the mall don't open until 10. Unless she's doing the opening shift, she could still do a wedding. You know, and if she's on the 1 o'clock shift, she can sometimes do 2 weddings before she gets to work. So I say she. There's some guys out there, of course, that do makeup. But you know what I'm saying. So people who work at the mall, sometimes they get that, you know, burnout mentality, like it's such a dead end. And they're really sitting on a gold mine. I always suggest if you're the kind of girl who notices women's engagement rings, and there's some people that are very jewelry savvy. You know, I'm not a really jewelry person, so I didn't notice they could be flaunting it right in my face on purpose, and I probably wouldn't notice. But so many women do always notice people's rings. Instead of going, oh, my God, it's gorgeous. Instead saying, wow, your ring's beautiful. When's your wedding? Oh, have you thought about how you're doing your makeup for your wedding? And most people are like, gosh, no, I haven't thought about it. Well, I think I'll just do it like I normally do it. Well, do you usually wear white? Well, no. Well, if you put on a white outfit, the makeup looks different than if you're wearing, you know, typical Waltz woman walking around in something dark. And, you know, you should consider having your makeup professionally done. Oh, gosh, I didn't think about that. Well, actually, I do that. Here's my card. You know, I mean, it's such an easy transition. I have, you know, some of my grads will purposely work a freelance shift for, you know, one of the cosmetic vendors one day a month just because they always book 1 to 2 weddings every time. So they're getting paid to be there all day. They're collecting free gratis, and they're keeping weddings on their books. And when you do one wedding, if you're good at what you do, typically you should get 2 weddings out of every wedding you do, because within every wedding party, you're at that age range where, you know, 1 or 2 of her bridesmaids are probably engaged, or their bridesmaid's sister or friend is engaged. And so if the makeup's good, they refer them. It just snowballs really, really fast. So wedding business is so easy. Okay, what's my next
wedding
question?
Business. You said the wedding business. Well, I wish I had some of my wedding friends to call in who could.
Your wedding friends?
You know what I mean? Makeup artists who do a lot of
right,
weddings.
Makeup artists? Okay.
thank you. you know, just to speak on that as well. Because, you know, there are a lot of people who do very, very well with weddings. And then there are some makeup artists that I know who can't get a wedding.
That's absolutely true. You know, and a lot of it has to do with their makeup skills. People who are
right.
self-taught, it's honestly really hard to figure out how to do makeup so it looks good in person, lasts
mm-hmm.
long enough, looks good in their video, looks good in their pictures when they get them a month later, and, you know, is photo friendly, you know, meaning it looks good in their pictures. But there's so much more to that. It's not just, you know, the girl that does the good makeup at the mall isn't always qualified for that, but that's kind of who starts it often. And there's people who have never done retail in their life who just think, oh, brides are easy. I, you know, my friend asked me to do hers, and I didn't. It just sort of happened. There's so
mm-hmm.
many makeup artists that say, well, I didn't have any training. I just started, and, I mean, I work quite a bit. But that's how easy weddings are. The brides don't know the difference in a good makeup artist and a bad makeup artist. You know, it's a general public. They don't know. I'm not saying they're all hiring bad makeup artists, but they don't know who else to call. You know, they don't know to call Cloutier, and Cloutier doesn't book weddings anyway. So dealing with the general public is an entirely different world than doing, you know, typical makeup for print or video or anything like that. It is an entirely different thing. I actually have like a 9-hour marketing class I do on that several times a year. And people are like, 9 hours? What could you possibly talk about? I can't hardly finish. You know, the class is 8 hours, but I don't stop talking. until
right.
I'm done. And we've been there till 2 o'clock in the morning before. You know, as long as there's still one student, won't listen to me. It's like, these are all the things that I've learned. This is how you do this. This is how you do that. You never do this. If they say this, you do this. If they say this, you do this. There's so much to do it, you know, to do it and to do it right. I lost a lot of money, even though I made a lot. Even my first year in the industry, I made a lot of mistakes, and I changed the way I did bookings, the way I did forms, the way I did scheduling, and, you know, I just learned how to do it better. So that is, you know, what I ideally teach everybody how to do within our bridal marketing class. But there are tons of people out there that sort of do weddings. You know, they do it, they don't really promote or advertise, they maybe have a website or not, and, you know, they do, you know, 10, 15 weddings a year. But the point is, if you're good at it, you can be doing 3 weddings every Saturday, an early one, a new one, and a late one, and one on Sunday, maybe a weekday wedding. That's how easy it is if you really grasp how to do it the right way. So, you know,
right.
not everyone aspires to work that hard. You know, I certainly didn't do all the weddings. I had, I think, 8 different artists work for me at one point because I couldn't do them all. I would always do a couple, but I would, you know, through my agency, book everybody else to do the rest of them that I couldn't do. And I've got several grads that have followed in my footsteps, and they do the same thing now. They didn't intend to start an agency, but, you know, they start getting assistance for themselves, and all of a sudden they got triple booked on one thing. They can't do it. They send people out, and it just grows that fast. Or it can, I should say. And, you know, it doesn't matter where you live. There's always going to be weddings. I've done trainings all over the world, and, you know, a lot of people say, yeah, but this area, you know, you can't get as much. Oh, I agree. You know, in Orange County, you can charge more than you can even in San Diego, which is only an hour away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you were in Kentucky, Lord knows what you could charge. But the point is, there is consistent business. It's about how good you are at explaining it. When I started doing weddings, it was so not the norm for people to hire a makeup artist. You know, everybody
mm-hmm.
got a dress, everybody got a ring and a limo and flowers, and they did these things. But a makeup artist, people would be like, nah, why? Like, I do my own makeup every day. Why would I do it? And I would just say to everybody, well, you probably know how to cook, too, but you're probably not serving dinner for everyone at your reception. And you might have some nice flowers in your garden, but I think you're not probably making your arrangements. And I know damn well you know how to bake a cake, but you're not making your wedding cake. And people would look at me and go,
right.
Oh, I didn't think of that. It's like, it's different. If nothing else, it is your last day on earth as a single woman. Pamper yourself. You're going to be married. You're going to be complaining. You don't get anniversary gifts and everything forever. So it's your last chance to really pamper yourself as a single woman and have everything done for you. So, I mean, there's lots of reasons and ways to do it, even when they say, well, I want it, but I can't afford it. I think I got like 8 different ways to make that happen. But like I said, that's a 10-hour class.
You know, there needs to be a part 2 to this conversation, because I know that there are so many people, you know, who have to have questions about how to do it. Because, you know, there are people, like you said earlier, you know, you have to research and you have to figure out what you want to do. Well, there's people who know they want to be makeup artists, but they don't know what area they want to be in. For some people, it's about trial and error. You jump in one area, see if you like it, go to another area. Sometimes you may think you want to be in one area, you start off there, and then you're led to another area, and you're like, oh, I really like this, and then that's where you stay your whole career. So it's different ways that you find out what it is that you really want to focus on or that you really like, or some people start off knowing right away. But I know that there's a lot of people out there who have to have questions about, you know, how do you do it? You know, how to even prepare, even. Like, we even talk about, like, how do you prepare? Like, some people who want to go into print, and then you're, you know, how do you put a portfolio together? Or something as simple as your comp cards. You know, I know there's a lot of questions. There has to be.
Well, there's millions. So I like I teach marketing in every single level of every class, just how to
mm-hmm.
do retail work and get an interview and get a job. That's like a 2-day class because there's so many I'm very anal, so I'm all about the details. The smallest details make such a big difference when you put them all together. And, you know, doing that is a couple days worth of things. You know, there's always, oh, sure, a word of advice, but a word of advice isn't enough to do things right or to master something. You know, the like I said, my bridal marketing class is 8 to 9 hours long itself. I have the class I'm actually doing tomorrow, or Monday and Tuesday night, on marketing in general. So it's not about bridal. It's about people who mostly want to do print work. It's called Achieving the Freelance Career Success You Desire. So it covers a huge, enormous plethora of you know, topics, everything to do with marketing, as far as, like you said, building your portfolio and, you know, how to find the right teams to work together and, you know, your images and how to collect them and who has the rights to what and how do you get stuff published and, you know, how does an agency work? How do you get representation? How do you get on these business lists? How do you get PR? How do you do things for free? Where to spend money? Where not? There's a lot of makeup artists will start their own business and they beg, borrow, and steal money to do, you know, advertising and all this and that, and they expect these miraculous results and the phones to ring off the hook, and that's just not how it works. And it makes me very sad when I see businesses, you know, that go out. Even when I'm driving down the street and I see, you know, whether it was a restaurant or a clothing store that I know opened less than a year ago and it's gone already, like, I know that makes my heart hurt. I know that was somebody's, you know, dream, maybe for decades, and they just didn't do their research to do it right, and it failed. And that makes me so sad. So, I mean, education is everything. But sadly, so many educational facilities don't deliver. And it fails so many people. And that's really, that's so frustrating to me. I know I shared that with you guys last time. That's why I opened my school, because there was a scam school ripping everybody off in the area. So that's frustrating. So I don't know, for anybody out there who's been, you know, feel like they didn't learn what they thought they were going to learn in school, A, you're not alone. Don't beat yourself up over it, but don't give up either on your ideals and your careers. You know, there's a fine line between learning from your mistakes and holding on to baggage. So ideally, you know, like a lot of people will say, like IMATS was just this weekend. You know, I got tons of emails from people going, oh, my God, I went to some seminars, they sucked. Okay, well, it's your own fault. Like you just walk into somebody or stand in line. It's like you don't even know who they are. If you didn't research them, if you spent 10 minutes on Google, you probably would have found out, you know, maybe they're, you know, a great artist but not a good speaker, or, you know, other people commenting that, you know, they didn't have much to say, or, you know, take responsibility and do research. There are some good, you know, educators out there. You just have to find them. They're very far, few, and in between, unfortunately. But, you know, I have people call my academy and say, oh, yeah, you know, I just drove by and saw it. You know, I want to enroll. It's like, okay, just because I'm close to you shouldn't mean anything. I could be a scam school. I'm not. But I think it's just irritating to me when people just want what's easy. You know? I mean, if you want to be a makeup artist and the best school was in Poland, I hope you save your money to go to Poland, you know. But I know most people don't have that much, you know, drive, unfortunately, these days.
Exactly. Well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I was saying you just mentioned IMATS. And so I was going to say, you know, with all the makeup and beauty shows out there, how important is it, or would you suggest, you know, artists, whether they're new or even experienced, to make attending, you know, a show here and there?
That's a good question.
You know, make that a priority.
I absolutely think it's a priority. I think every artist should be there to every show they can possibly get to. It's frustrating, so frustrating to me when, you know, I'll hear, you know, of a graduate that I know is not working like she wanted to, you know, or not working maybe sometimes at all. And then I'll see, you know, that they're not going down. It's like, why would you not go? Have you already given up? You know, some people are like, oh, I got a booking, or I'm doing a test shoot. It's like, I don't care if it's a paid booking. This should be the one weekend a year. It's the International Makeup Artist Trade Show. It's like an hour from you, or in some cases it's 5 minutes away from some people. Like, that should be a priority on your book, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Some people think, oh, I already went to school, I learned everything. as fabulous as my school is, and we do have the number one success rate in the world for what we do, they're still, I can't teach them everything. I can teach a lot. That doesn't mean they absorb it all. Statistically, you only remember 20% of what you hear. So, I mean, that's a lot of misinformation in my facility alone. But there's always something new. There's new technique. There's new, you know, camera equipment that you have to adjust your makeups for. There's new ingredients that you should be aware of. There's reasons to go to IMATS, that alone, to keep up with what you do. But, you know, there's also contacts and networking. And, of course, you know, refilling your kit and getting things on a discount isn't bad either. But when people think, oh, I can't afford it, okay, how can you not afford to go? This is something you know comes once a year. You should have been saving your money. You know, people say, oh, I can't, I'm not going to go because, you know, I can't afford to buy anything anyway. Well, there's so much more to do there than shop. But I think that's one of the biggest mistakes new people, when they go to their trade shows the very first time, they're so excited about the shopping that they spend the whole day, and at the end they're like, oh, who spoke? Oh, what class? Oh, I missed it. Where was that? It's like, don't be so clueless. Like, research. Everything is about research and knowledge and education. So research first. Look at the classes. If it seems interesting, Google that, you know, artist or instructor or speaker or owner of a company or whoever it is, and find out. Get, you know, there's message boards everywhere where people are either complaining about something, the class they went to, or raving about it. You know, it's not that hard to do research and find out if you would benefit from it or maybe possibly waste your time. You know, and there's artists at all levels. I think the biggest mistake of most artists is thinking they are bigger, better, and badder than they are. You know, all over the world, it's not just here in America. Everywhere I go, people are like, well, I've been doing makeup for 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, 25 years, whatever. So I just need an update. I just want a refresher. That's all anyone ever thinks they want. And, you know, I get it because they go to a lot of classes and, you know, they honestly don't learn that much. A lot of people are pretty remedial or just not good at teaching or not good at speaking. And so they don't feel like they're what they learned, so they think they must know everything else. When there is a lot out there for people to know. Like, I've done things where people just wanted something really advanced, and I find out they still don't know how to, you know, prep a face or pick a foundation or color match. You know, it's crazy, the skills that some people have convinced themselves are enough. But, you know, you don't know what you don't know until you know. So I know I said that last time, too.
Donna, now talk a little bit, because you have a class coming up, correct?
I do. And I think, did we already cut off our hour?
We have a few more minutes.
Okay. Can we tell people how they can call in on the number to hear the remainder of the conversation?
Say that again?
Can we give people the number so if, when it gets cut off online, they can listen still on the phone?
Okay. The call-in number is 914-803-4399. Again, it's 914-803-4399, and we have like about 5 minutes.
Okay. What else do you want to talk about?
No, I wanted you to mention your class is coming up.
Oh, that's right. Okay. It's it is tomorrow night here in California. It is from 4 to 10 p.m. for 2 nights in a row, Monday and Tuesday. It's a marketing class in general. So for makeup artists, I'll read you some of the topics that we're covering. Steps to building a thriving freelance career, how to improve the caliber of the models and photographers you work with, which is so imperative. I mean, you can learn if your makeups are good even on a bad model, but once you learn your makeups are good, you have to progress to using agency models, and so many people just don't know how to do that. How to build a stronger team to work with, you know, which raises the caliber of your work. The ability to pull agency models direct yourself, where most people wait for the photographers to do it. I can teach makeup artists how to do that themselves. How to do successful collaborations. I have so many people constantly, makeup artists are complaining that they don't do tests. Testing is stupid. It's a waste of time. Well, it's only a waste of time if you're doing it wrong. and people, no one teaches you how, so people don't know. They just keep going through the motions and getting nothing out of it, but they really have only, you know, I want to say to blame themselves, but ideally, again, I feel bad because there's no one teaching them, so it's not always common sense. But I teach people how to, you know, pretty much get portfolio images every time out of every shoot you do. How to not get taken advantage of and all the scams there are in the industry for freelancers. How to do booking agreements and client contracts and the 20 things that most artists don't know and do wrong. Collecting images from the photographers, which we all know as makeup artists, is a feat sometimes. it's so frustrating. But, you know, definitely have ways to help people out with that and getting their images all the time. And model releases and retouching and so much about retouching, that could be a whole day class in its own. Not how to retouch, but how it should be done and what's ethical versus what's over the top and, you know, what's going to hurt your career more than help it. How to get your work published, getting and how to get agency reputation, getting free press or PR, how to utilize social media to actually grow the business, not just talk about what you ate for lunch. The 10 things never to do on set. How to improve your booking potential and transitioning into bigger and better jobs. Fee negotiations, which so many people need. I want to say that women in general are not as good at negotiating salary and fees. That's, you know, everybody kind of knows that as far as getting raises. So it's hard for us to negotiate, you know, the proper fees. And a lot of makeup artists get stuck. Like, you know, they might, I'm up to $600 a day, but I just can't seem to get past it. Well, how long have you been there? 8 years? It's like, oh, my God. Cost of living raise alone should have been, you know, something. So how to get outside of the box, whether it's $150 a day or $1,500 a day, you need to raise it, whatever. How to really start to brand yourself. What else do we have? Proper portfolio layout. Like you said, you know, that was a question, but that's like an hour segment for me of how to explain that and show that and transition what should be in their book and the order it should go. There is like kind of like secrets to how a portfolio should work. It's the difference in how long someone will look at your book. It's a lot to do with psychology, but it's a pretty interesting portion that we're going to do on that. And how to, you know, develop a portfolio that's really going to get you work, how to make your resume rock, and how to start a business. I have a lot of people who want to start their own little makeup studio or agency or cosmetic line. I've got a few grads that have developed products. If you guys have seen My Couture Blush Papers, that's one of my graduates invented that. It's really brilliant. So, you know, it's like looks like blotting papers, but you can apply blush. You can do bronzer, highlight. She has actually regular blotting papers with salicylic acid, which most people know that helps, you know, clear up blemishes. So it's really brilliant. I have them, of course, online at my store, but they also are on sale at Nordstrom and Neiman Marcus. And Carlene Gay.
I can't remember if you said this or not, but is this just a one-day class?
It's a two-day class, so it's 12
two-day
hours.
Class. Okay.
Yeah, I'm also doing it in Perth, Australia, in April, and it's 2 days there as well. But my one here at the Academy is 12 hours because it's mainly a lot of my grads, but these are over and above what they've ever already learned in class, and they've already had probably 60 hours of marketing, but there's that much to cover. So in Perth, because a lot of those are new artists for me, it's actually longer. It's going to be 2 8-hour days over there. Let's see what else. There's a couple other things. Business cards, all the top mistakes that most artists make. And it's so funny because I show them like maybe 50 to 100 cards and, you know, we all laugh about it, but, you know, they've already handed me their cards in some cases and it's like, okay, but this is what you guys did do. So it's easy to laugh at someone else makes a mistake, but a lot of people don't own that they made the same mistakes. And, you know, where to spend businesses to grow or spend money to grow your business and, you know, things to avoid that really just aren't going to be of benefit to people. So it's a lot of stuff we cover, a lot. And people are interested, they can go to my Facebook and I have posts about it. So it is available via webinar if people are interested in watching it online tomorrow night.
Well, we're definitely going to have to get you back so we can kind of maybe focus on one of those areas a little bit.
I know, there's so much.
That's a lot. It's a lot. And, you know, just listening to you list all of that stuff, it's like I really wonder how many people really take the time to actually pay attention to that. Like you just said, you know, business cards and, you know, things,
there's,
you know, things
not,
that we do wrong with simple
business
cards.
I probably come across one good business card maybe out of 25.
Hmm.
You know, but it's, the thing is, it's not about just, you know, my opinion just because it's the way I am.
Right, right.
I teach, everything I do teach, my students know, is based on science and psychology.
Mm-hmm.
So things are factual. Like I like to say, everything I teach could be proven in a court of law.
Right.
So, it's a different perspective. I'm not the normal makeup artist out there, certainly. You know, like most makeup artists, I always make fun. You know, they'll say, why did you do those colors on her? Oh, because her moon is in Venus today? So everyone gets blue. You know? I mean, I hate to make fun of us stereotypically, but there's a lot of makeup artists that are just so, you know, organic and, you know, hippie-like. And that's just, you know, I grew up trying to learn from those people, and it just didn't work for me, you know. Like, when
right.
I would try it and go, okay, well, I did it too, but why didn't it work? Oh, it usually does. And they would, like, skip away, you know. It's like, okay, that's not enough for me, you know. So I would study the science of things and realize that's why it worked on her, but not her. Oh. So those are, you know, part of those advanced methods that I've discovered, and a lot of it grew and grew and grew as I taught, and people would ask me questions and I didn't know the answer. That would drive me nuts. So I would research more and more and more till I figured out the answer and how to articulate it, and then how to articulate it to people who are visual learners versus audio learners versus
mm-hmm.
repetitive learners, you know. So, you know, after 17 years of teaching that just at my academy, and I taught for years before that for Makeup Forever and Christian Dior and other companies, you know, I like to say I specialize in teaching and how to, you know, give people light bulb moments. That really is what I thrive on, is getting people to get to the next level, even if it's just mentally, because they get so excited about it, they kind of rediscover their passion for what they do. And don't just, you know, get up and go do another bride, you know, or whatever.
All right. Donna, what is your Facebook?
Well, if they just look for Donna Me, they can find me. And if they also look for Donna Me Beauty Expert Educator, that's my fan page. But, and you'll know because there's lots of Donna Me's out there, actually. So if you go to, I guess, Donna Me Beauty Expert Educator, and then you can just put in Donna Me and see the same picture and click on that, because as we all know, Facebook, you know, no one sees fan book or fan pages really anymore unless you go to the fan page feed, which nobody even knows where it is.
Right.
So they can go to my personal page. Most people are transitioning their, you know, personal page into their business page just so, you know, they're showing up in people's feeds again.
Right.
And if they want to go to my academy site, that is empireacademy.com. And my own website is Donna Me, last name MEEINC.com, for DonnaMeInc.com. And from there, they can get to my own page, my own portfolio, resume, all my speaking videos and testimonials and the academy site and the store site and everything else I do.
Wonderful.
I'm glad that you guys are going to be at the Fame Show, I hear, that I told
yeah.
you about last time. Woo!
Yes.
Like I said, you have a booth, and you're going to be speaking, doing a live show there is what I suggested. So is that what you're doing?
Absolutely. That's what we're going to be doing.
That's awesome. You guys owe me a martini.
Well, you may get that sooner than you thought, than you think. Are you going to be in town next week?
Next week?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm here. You guys are going to be
here? I will. I'll give you a ring.
Fabulous.
I will give you a ring.
All right.
So, and then we can talk about when you're going to come back.
Okay, for my third time?
Yes, of course.
Oh, just book me once a week already. I'm just kidding.
Well, we'll work on getting you back as soon as possible. How about that?
All right. No worries. Well, if anybody wants to do watch the, I don't know if anyone is listening that is in the Orange County area, and that's my academy is in Costa Mesa, where you can come to the two-day workshop live. Otherwise, you can watch via webinar. You just have to email or call 714-438-2437, and you can ask for Kimiko, the education director, and she can sign you up.
All right. That's going to be great. Well, keep us posted on your other classes and everything else that you're doing so we can make announcements about that.
All right.
And, yeah, we'll get you back on because I want to focus a little bit more on some of the things that you mentioned tonight in detail. I don't know, I just feel like people are going to want to, you know,
we
they
had
have
no callers to ask no questions today.
No callers. Everybody was on the line listening, but nobody wanted to talk.
They're scared of me.
I think they're scared. Yes, that's disappointing, though. You know, we get on them every once in a while about that.
No worries. I have enough to say as it is.
we'll work on it. We'll definitely try to get them to call in the next time because I know that there are some things that they're going to want to know. So, you guys,
right.
don't be afraid to talk. Call in the next time. So you can get your questions answered. But thank you again, Donna. We really appreciate you coming on. And as always, you're always welcome. So when you ever have anything you want to talk about, just let us know.
All right. Thanks for having me.
All right. See you soon.
Have a good night. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. Thank you guys for tuning in tonight for our show tonight. Next week, I believe... Well, just wait and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. I forgot who our guest is for next week or what the topic is, so we'll get that information out to you soon. But I don't know if there were any winners tonight that you can announce.
Tamika Frazier, we want to congratulate her for winning tickets. And that's it for tonight, Tamika Frazier. Maybe we'll do something on the blog or on Facebook to give the other three tickets away tonight.
Okay.
And then we'll look forward to next week, and we may have more tickets next week.
All right. Sounds good. Well, looking forward to seeing you, Tamika, in June. And, again, if you guys like tonight's show, go out and mark it as a favorite. Leave comments on our page here. Or also you can leave comments on the Beauty Talk Facebook page or Twitter, wherever you like. We thank you for your support, and please join us again next week at 9 p.m. And in the meantime, be beautiful and blessed. Have a good night.
Good night.